Right, so we're standing opposite the Blue Blazer, and we're just outside of Griffin Venues. I am with Helen and Jimmy, who have just come off stage from 3,000 Trees, which is an absolutely fantastic show. And please do read my review, because I will be gushing even more than I will be right now. So, but Jimmy, you only came into this show a week ago, is that right?
Yes, yes, I was called in at short notice. These things can happen in the festival, and I said, yes, I'll step into the breach, and regretted it for a week. But I'm so delighted that I said yes, because it's a play or a poem I'm glad I didn't miss.
Helen, how have you been coping with the interloper?
Oh, he's a nightmare. No, I'm only joking. No, me and Jimmy have worked together. I think this is our fourth job together. And I've been out of drama school 5 years, so that's we know each other really, really well anyway. And it was just really easy, the integration, because I think the relationship that our characters have is very strong. We already had that as people, so it makes your job much easier, much easier.
I mean, you know, in the I assume, like actors, when they get reincarnated, you know, if you start out on a level and you're a great actor, but you know, if you've been good in that life, you come back and you have a fantastic voice. Believe it or not, I'm not actually saying this to you, Jimmy, but Helen, you're blessed with, you know, an amazing stage presence and also that fantastic voice. When did you first discover that you had it?
I'm going to be really honest with you, not very long ago. Even at drama school, I was definitely the bottom of the singing class. And what I'm like as an actor is, if I can't do something, I will just work and work and work and work until I can. And I played Cinderella at Christmas in Perth, and kind of went into the first rehearsal and was quite wobbly. And then the MD took me aside and said, look, you've got a great voice, you just need to find it, you need to go into a room and work really hard. And since then, that's what I've done, and I've kind of found my love for singing. And especially in this, because they're old Scots songs and they're Gaelic songs, they're easy to sing because they're from the heart, and I think that's what makes this one especially easy for me.
Well, without giving any spoilers away, there is a fantastic bit of Gaelic in there, and Jimmy, what's the English translation of it?
It's the English translation is, you should never brain a British spy with a bottle of good Highland whiskey. For that sort of work, you should always use the Lowland sort, for it's all it's good for anyway.
Which translates into the Gaelic as,
Ach behorjut inning hura biakar breitenoch le botel uskebehe mana geeldoch, gan obershin ach behorjut axtu ne galdoch a clacken, han yella maguyerisin dat elako you.
And there are London writers who think that it's not worth preserving Gaelic.
I'm not a Gaelic speaker either, so that's, I had to learn that phonetically.
It's not even Gaelic, she's made it up.
Don't tell anyone.
But the show itself is around the life of the SNP vice president, and he's an extraordinary guy. The 3,000 trees of the title were planted at the University of Haifa, where he was an honorary professor, was that right, or honorary doctorate?
Professor emeritus, yeah.
Emeritus,
yeah.
And that was for writing the... Oh, no, the writer. The writer is just
George.
Walking past. George, you've got to come in and be in here.
You can't push me away and then walk me in at the same time.
Oh, yeah, bro.
George, how did you come to decide to write this particular life story?
Willie McCrae. Well, I'll tell you, it's very simple. I've been wanting to write this play for 30 years. And plays always find their space, you know. So now, in 2014, the story of Willie McCrae before the referendum, and with these actors from the Highlands, this is the perfect time for it. And all these things, you know, like the ducks are in a line, you know. So it's in the stars, as far as I'm concerned. So that's why I wanted to write it. But also the fact that Willie McCrae, if he lived to tell the tale, he was going to Thurso, to the preliminary hearing of the Nairix inquiry at the town hall in Thurso. And the reason he was shot in the back of the head in a bog outside Dorney was because he knew something. Now, I don't know what he knew, but what I do want to do is to tell that story, and that's what we've done. So that's why I wrote it.
And the story, without giving anything away, is McCrae arrives at a petrol station, and with him are the daughter of an old friend.
Yeah. Works there, yeah.
Who works there after getting her English Lit degree from Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. And then there is also...
A whiskey salesman. A whiskey salesman. Yeah, the best in the business. Sells about 10 cases a day. Yeah. slash MI5 spook lurking in the background, yes, who's been on Willy's tail for a long time.
And the interesting thing with the character, again, no spoilers, of the MI5 spook, is he's fetish, he's Cambridge, he's very much woven into the fabric of the British ruling class. So he's a kind of dual identity of, you know, being the Scots, you know, the blue on the Union Jack, I suppose, is how you might describe it.
Or the, or the blood on the carpet.
The blue blood on the carpet. But how does it come to sort of... Do you see the character as representing something bigger? Do you see that... I mean, obviously it's based on real events, but does this character, who's presumably more fictitious than something of an invention... This is Helen having to go off to...
Janis Joplin at Assembly. I'm very excited. It's the first show I've seen at the festival, so I'm very excited. It was lovely to chat to you.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
See you tomorrow.
Genuine bit of fringe colour there for you, folks. Do you see the MI5 character, is he something represented in the Scottish psyche? You know, this
he's real. Willie McRae knew the people that are following him by the first name terms, because he knew, you know, he was in the security service, the intelligence during the war, so he knew all these people, you know. And the thing is, what Sinclair Oliphant represents is the other side of Scotland. You know, it's a sort of schizophrenic country. On one hand you've got the Willie McRae's or in our play, Willie Mackay, who represents sort of liberty and freedom and all that poetry. On the other side, you've got the landed gentry who represent the system. And in my part of the world, in Caithness, they're all called Sinclair, right? And they represent power, right? My MP, the Westminster MP, is called John Thurzo, but that's not his real name. His real name is Viscount Lord Thurzo. And he can sit in both chambers. He can have a shite in both hisses. And he's the only one that can do that. And that's what's wrong. He owns 78,000 acres. And I don't want to be represented by somebody who owns 78,000 acres. I want to be represented by somebody who gets voted for by the people. Not fucking parks and fields and deer and sheep.
Tenants.
Well, tenants have the vote, yes, but there's not a lot of them left.
No,
you know what I mean?
That's true. Sheep don't vote.
They've got worse fucking sense.
Only in New Zealand.
Well, anyway, the point is that the schizophrenia of that is the encapsulation of our country. And people have to understand that. Because essentially what you're talking about when you talk about John Thurzo MP is you're talking about the 19th century. Now it might have slipped your mind, but this is the 21st century.
Not to shout you down.
You know what I mean? So we need a new democracy, and what we need is our country back, so we can have a democracy where the people get represented by, you know, this thing called a polity, you know, people, as opposed to landed power. And that's the problem. I mean, if you look at Sutherland, right, next to Caithness, it's three times the size of Caithness. Caithness has got 28,000 people in it. Sutherland's got 17,500. Sutherland is three times the size of Caithness, and it's empty. You could put the entire population of Hong Kong into Sutherland, and you could walk all bloody day and never see a soul. That's the problem. We're hanging on to our own country with our fingers. If you go to Betty Hill, that's what they're doing. These are the ones that couldn't even afford to go to Nova Scotia. That's what it is, that picturesque thing, you know what I mean? And when you look at the landscape of Sutherland and Caithness, what you see is the result of history. That's what you see. It is beautiful, of course it is, but people mistake beauty for other things. It's purely aesthetics. But history, and what this play is about, is trying to say all these things happen for a reason. You know, the reason's not difficult. The reason's just history.
I mean, speaking of overrepresentation, at 9 o'clock there is another production of 3,000 trees happening. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, it's like buses. You know, you wait for a play about William McRae for 30 years, and then along comes two. You know, so we don't hold any. We support the boy. You know, we think he's all right. I haven't seen the show myself, but I'll be going to see it at some point. And we wish him well. He's got a little bitty venue. We all think it's fine. You know, we don't have a problem with that. It just goes to show he knows a good title when he sees one.
And where are you hoping to take the production after this? Is it going on, or is this a fringe?
Well, we would love to tour the play. I mean, this play was crowdfunded, you know, so it's been supported by punters. There's been zero, not a shekel from the public body to put this play on, and so we managed to pre-sell about 700 tickets before opening night, which is quite a result. But what we would need to tour the play is somebody, either a co-producer, or it'd be very hard to do a second crowdfunding exercise to take it on tour. But the way it's been directed, thankfully, by Libby MacArthur, who's done such a stunning job of making it a very human story and a relevant story after September 19th. When I read the play last year, I felt an impulse to make sure that it was on this month before the referendum, because I thought it was so important. I thought it was vital, and that we were missing a trick if we didn't put it on September. So me and my co-producer Mark McNichol pulled out all the stops to make it happen this month. But it has a life afterwards. It's completely relevant. It'll be as relevant on the 19th of September as it is now. But we would love to see it. I mean, as the themes in the play, make it a community play so all the people, Paula, can go. We would like this play to tour the communities of the islands, but we would need something to something big to happen for that. We'd need some support from someone or somebody to make that happen.
All right, and we like to finish these interviews by saying, if there's another show at the Fringe that audience should see after they've seen 3,000 Trees at the Griffin venue, what should they see?
Well, I haven't yet seen been able to see a single play, but I'd say go and see the other 3,000 Trees. Go and see Andy Patterson's 3,000 Trees. And if, you know, when people are booking the play, please make sure that you know which one you're choosing to see first, because there has already been a lot of confusion. My dad booked for the other 3,000 Trees and said, I'm coming to see your play. So it is important that it is an inconvenience, there's two of the same title, but be clear about, are you booking for George Gunn's 3,000 Trees or Andy Patterson's 3,000 Trees? Are you booking Jimmy Chisholm's 3,000 Trees or Andy Patterson's? So.
All right, and an obvious question, flying above the ramparts up there is the Union Jack. Is that going to be there in a year's time?
No.
I would hope not.
I don't think so.
All right, guys, thank you very much for talking to Fringe Review.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan. Thanks a lot.